Keeping Democracy Alive. I'm Bert Cohen.
Check for pulse.
Stand clear. Push to shock.
So, yes, there's a huge gap between public opinion and public policy. That people don't feel that they can do very much.
You know what this is? This is a very Hamiltonian system. Alexander Hamilton being the guy here in a very un-Jeffersonian.
In the case of the Republicans, it's dramatically the opposite. But even in the case of the Democrats.
An absolute typhoon of terror against African Americans in the South.
America's fascists are those people who think that Wall Street comes first and the American people come second.
Really seen as a financial sector that's gotten out of hand.
The shooting, the violence, that is not the drug problem. That is, in fact, the drug policy problem.
I speak tonight for the dignity of man.
Keeping democracy alive. It takes some effort to do that, especially when it's under attack so many places. And part of what democracy is about is our culture, our arts. Winston Churchill, when asked about deploying troops to liberate art from the Germans, somebody asked him if it was worthwhile. He said, "What else are we fighting for? It's about freedom." And this, well, we all know about the Oscars, the Academy Awards, Hollywood's official reward for making a lot of money, making some movies. Every now and then, there's some really good movies in there. It's expected that, and you may be listening to this after the fact, that the choice for Best Picture is between Boyhood and Birdman, but who the heck knows? But we're not going to talk about the Oscars here. One of the choices for them we are going to talk about, and that is the American Sniper film. We're going to talk about that a little bit with our guest, Ed Rampell. Ed, thanks for being back on Keeping Democracy Alive.
Hey, Bert. Good to be with you.
Ed Rampell is a Los Angeles-based film historian and critic. He's the author of the 2005 book, Progressive Hollywood, A People's Film History of the United States, and he's co-author of three other film history books, including the latest, the Hawaii Movie and Television Book. The James Agee Cinema Circle of Film Critics, Historians, and Scholars has announced its nominations for the 8th Annual Progressive Movie Awards, called by its friends and fans the Progy Awards, recognizing 2014's best progressive films and filmmakers. The Progies highlight features, documentaries, and the artists who made and appear in them, evaluating their political, social, economic content and form. The nominations and awards are given in a variety of categories named after great filmmakers of conscience, consciousness, and creativity. Well, Ed, thanks again for being back with us. What is the James Agee Circle, and how did the Progressive Movie Awards come about?
Good question, and we do have the winners that we could announce on the show.
Oh, yes.
The James Agee Cinema Circle is a international group of left-leaning film critics dedicated to highlighting the best in progressive cinema and also the artists who create films that have something significant to say about the human condition and also that do it in a creative, imaginative way. The Progies are the awards that the James Agee Cinema Circle annually bestows upon those deserving films and filmmakers. It began about 8 years ago when I got the idea to highlight these films as a way to help generate an audience to see progressive films, because there's a strong relationship between progressive cinema and a progressive audience. They really need each other. If nobody goes to the box office to go see an Oliver Stone movie, to go see Selma or whatever, the studios and independent financiers, et cetera, are a lot less likely to finance those movies and to distribute them. I should add that I have, like, you know, absolutely no commercial connection to the movies. You know, I'm not an arm of any studio or anything like that. We're an independent group of lefty critics, reviewers, film historians, cinema scholars, etc., who really believe that, maybe when you go see 50 Shades of Grey, which I haven't seen, so
I don't intend to,
any critical assessment of it, but maybe like the big quote-unquote drama or conflict is about two individuals' private sex lives. Well, that could certainly be very interesting, but I have to say that the most dramatic thing that one could see in terms of a conflict in the arts are human beings standing up to fight against injustice and oppression and for their liberation and freedom. That's a lot more dramatic than just like two kinky individuals, for example.
That's true. And it oftentimes becomes, I mean, they become big successes. People like that kind of thing. You know, the David and Goliath, the little guy standing up for his or her rights and fighting against very, very difficult odds. On the really strict opposite side of that, in 2015, you know, millions of eyes are on the annual Glam Fest known as the Oscars. As you write in your article in the Progressive magazine, this year's Academy Award race for Best Picture is a classic Hollywood left versus right contest, pitting a biopic about an American marksman against Selma, a film depicting Martin Luther King Jr., an apostle for peace, who was actually assassinated by an American sniper. Now, Code Pink has denounced the film American Sniper as militaristic propaganda. It's based, of course, on Chris Kyle's American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history. Let's talk about that. How many Iraqis did the hero, and I use that term in quotes, kill?
Chris Kyle had 160 confirmed kills. They were mostly or all Iraqis. And first of all, Clint Eastwood's film is, without a doubt, it's a very well-made film.
Uh-huh. Well, he's a good filmmaker.
Just get that on the table.
Uh-huh.
So was The Birth of a Nation, which was released 100 years ago on March 3rd.
Yes, indeed.
E.W. Griffith's despicable racist epic. It was a very well-made movie. Having said that, the problems with American Sniper could be seen early on in the film. There's this very interesting cinematic conflation of the 9/11 terrorist attacks and the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We see the Twin Towers in a TV clip that Chris Kyle is watching on TV. He's already, by the way, volunteered to serve in the Navy SEALs before 9/11. A scene or two later, he's in Iraq fighting. And the cinematic conflation there perpetuates one of the biggest canards of this disastrous U.S. invasion of Iraq, that somehow Saddam Hussein, as reprehensible as he was involved in the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Which is, of course, absurd.
Now, President Bush himself, not Jeb, not George H.W., but George W., he himself has said that the Iraqi regime had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. But the film perpetuates this fatal propagandistic flaw, and it does so as part of perpetuating the narrative and the illusion that Chris Kyle is a, and this is a quote from the film, a protector. And he is protecting the U.S. troops from these terrorists, one sort of his doppelganger, one terrorist sniper, marksman, etc., in particular. And by perpetuating the big lie and not ever mentioning the even bigger lie about why the U.S. invaded Iraq. That is the so-called weapons of mass destruction,
right,
which were figments of
totally.
Rumsfeld and Bush and Cheney and Rice and Wolfowitz and Pearl and figments of their imagination.
Totally.
Colin Powell, all those liars, those Goebbels-like liars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By not even mentioning that, it perpetuates this narrative and illusion that Chris Kyle somehow is a protector. Now, if we put the film into context, that the U.S. imperialists invaded a country unprovoked, that did us no harm, and that, by the way, had UN observers there searching
right.
with very wide access for those so-called weapons of mass destruction. And by the way, a lot of those UN members who were doing those observers, they were Americans, by
mm-hmm.
the way.
Yes.
People never mentioned that, but a lot of them were Americans, I know, because I contacted the United Nations about this a while back. By not mentioning any of that, we fail to see an alternative concept of people like Chris Kyle, that they were invaders, intruders, busybodies, meddlers, who had absolutely no reason to be thousands and thousands of miles away to attack a country that had not attacked us, and that therefore, if that's the case, what do we say about somebody who killed 160 of the people in that country?
Right.
And we do see him targeting women. We see him targeting children.
Mm.
And also, what does it say? And here's an even more perplexing question. What does it say about the Iraqis that he kills, that they were, some of them were innocent, others, could it be that they were patriots defending their country against an unprovoked attack, like the people that, so what Clint Eastwood does, what the scriptwriter does, is completely take the Iraq experience outside of the historical context, and in order to serve this illusion that somehow this guy Chris Kyle is "quote unquote" the protector.
Hmm. And I know there have been a lot of protests against the content of this film, and you're right. I mean, as you said, "Birth of a Nation," which came out March 3rd, 1915. It was a very well done film. This apparently is a very well done film. I do not intend to see it. Code Pink says this film completely absolves the U.S. of its many crimes in Iraq and perpetuates the American warmongering narrative that's really rooted in Arab anti-Arab racism, which is quite apparent in the film. Code Pink handed out a flyer at a protest which read, "American sniper fuels racism and war." And as you point out in your article, Ed Rampell, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee has reported a drastic increase in hate speech and anti-Arab, anti-Muslim threats since the film's release. You've seen the film. Does it fuel racism and war, do you think? Does it glorify it?
I think that it does, but allow me to qualify that out of fairness, because I am a movie critic and a film historian, as you know, and I never publicly criticize a film that I haven't seen. So I think the answer is a qualified yes. And here's the qualification. There are two very specific scenes that challenge the official narrative of the Bush regime, and that one involves the actor who plays Chris Kyle's brother, who is a Marine serving in Iraq. And they bump into each other on the tarmac at what I believe is an airfield. And the brother is very distraught, and he's, like, really extremely critical, and he uses words I won't use on the airwaves to attack the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. And then there's a very powerful scene at a funeral where one of Chris Kyle's comrades in arms, who has been killed, has the deceased's letter, I believe, to his wife, is read by, I believe it's his wife, very critical of the war in Iraq. Now, I brought this up with Sophia Armin, who is the Code Pink campaigner that I interviewed regarding American Sniper. And she said to me, yes, it's true. And some people believe that that makes this an anti-war film. Plus, we have to add that without a doubt, Clint does show how PTSD affects the individual soldiers, such as Chris himself, and also the burdens that the war puts on the shoulders of not only those serving, but their families. That's all in the film, no doubt about it, to be fair. But Sophia Armin said that those two other incidents that I mentioned that are critical of the war, because Chris Kyle is the protagonist, he goes on to actually, not publicly, but to his wife, denounce in particular the letter that was written by the slain soldier. And Chris actually says, if I remember correctly, he actually says, that letter is what got him killed. Writing that letter is what killed him. Words to that effect.
Hmm.
So Sophia Armin said that his dismissal of these protests against the war, these questions, and because he's the protagonist, he's the hero, he's the lead character, she feels that his disregarding of them makes American Sniper definitely not an anti-war movie.
Does it fuel racism, do you think? Anti-Arab racism?
You know, I read that statement, and I kind of, you know, thought, that's interesting. But, you know, I didn't really know about that. And look what has happened after that organization made that claim. We had three murders at Chapel Hill, North Carolina, of three Muslims over supposedly
parking.
A parking space.
Yeah.
Now, I asked Dean Obeidallah, who's an Islamic comic, who just met with President Obama this month to discuss these type of issues before the shooting, by the way, and he warned Obama. Dean said that something like this was going to happen, and unfortunately it happened very shortly afterwards. But Dean said to me, listen, when people say, well, this was just a dispute about a parking space, well, and he had arguments with other neighbors about parking. Okay, that may be the case, Dean said, but he didn't go shoot anybody else in that complex except the three Muslims.
Right. I got to ask, first off, what do you think, Ed Rampell, what does it say to the world if, and I don't think it will, but if American Sniper were to win Best Picture, what do you think the world reaction might be?
I think that this is an excellent question, as usual, from you, Bert. And after I answer it, I'd like you to ask me about the other Oscar race where there's another left versus right clear choice. And it has to do with another despicable pro-war film.
Ooh.
Okay, so if American Sniper wins, it's like giving that golden statuette and its imprimatur to war. Now, one can make a very strong case that Chris Kyle was a very, very troubled individual. And, you know, there's no doubt Bradley Cooper does a very
good job
portraying a guy with PTSD and his family problems and so on.
Right.
And at this point in American history, when we've been bogged down in endless war, and you know, Bert, ever since you and I were born, this country's more or less been at war with these endless enemies. But since 9/11, it's been a perpetual state of war. Usually we get 2 years before some maniacal invasion of Grenada to get the commies or whatever crazy excuse they have.
Right.
But it's just been unbroken now, what is it, 14 years of constant war that people, they can't win.
People don't even think about peace anymore. We're just in eternal war. That's it.
Well, I would say a lot of people don't think about peace, but there are some of us who do.
Yes, that's
but,
true, hopefully.
So I think it would be sending a really bad message. But here's the deal. One has to look at how the voting works in the Academy. I'm not an expert on that. I understand that in the Best Picture category, it's the general membership can vote. And I believe that a few years ago, the Academy extended up to 10 in that category. You could have 10 nominees. This year, for some reason, I believe there's only 8. But if you do the math, and Bert, you know, I failed math in school. But if you do the math, what this means is that if American Sniper was to get 14% or so of the vote, it could win the Best Picture if no other film gets,
more than
you know,
14%.
Let's say, gets 13% or less.
Right.
American Sniper could win. And here's the danger that it could coalesce all the right-wing votes. And the people who are longtime fans of Clint Dirty Harry Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, there's no doubt about it. It's a well-made and well-acted film. I'm not disputing that in the least. So there is that danger. It would, and how would the world perceive this? It's like pouring oil on a burning fire, especially because, as my lead sentence in my Progressive magazine article, which people could read at progressive.org, it's pitting American Sniper against the film that was the apostle of peace,
yes,
the champion of nonviolence, one of the top resistors to the war in Vietnam, Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of Prince, who was killed by an American sniper. And the Academy has a clear choice, just in terms of the content. They could pick a film that arguably celebrates and propagandizes war, or it can choose a film that agitates in favor of peace and human rights and equality. There's rarely been a starker choice before the Academy, and it's also true in the best documentary category race as well. We have an extremely despicable, one-sided mockumentary made by Rory Kennedy called Last Days in Vietnam, which is like trying to put a turd on a blossom. It's trying, the Vietnam War is probably the most discredited war in American history, and Bobby Kennedy's daughter, of all people, is trying to find the one shining, glowing moment in that war, and she's done it in a way...
Well, she's the producer?
She's the director of the film.
Oh, my.
And people should remember, yes, Bobby ran as a peace candidate, but we should also remember that her uncle, when he was the president of the USA, JFK, raised the number of quote-unquote U.S. military advisors in Vietnam, according to CNN, from 600 to 16,000. So we have this daughter of a ruling class family making this awful film that never, never, never once allows the Viet Cong or the North Vietnamese to present their side of the story. You have people, dubious people like Richard Armitage, who is one of the bete noirs of the American left, is presented as this great hero in this film, and all the South and many of the so-called collaborators with the U.S., the South Vietnamese who fought on the side of the imperialists. They are the only people who are extensively interviewed. You never, ever hear from the National Liberation Front.
Wow.
You never hear from the North. And
that's amazing.
It's a very despicable film, and it's up against the Edward Snowden documentary, Citizen Four.
Yes.
So you have this another left versus right contest in the best documentary category. And Citizen Four, of course, is directed by Laura Poitras, who, along with Glenn Greenwald and a Guardian reporter, went to Hong Kong. And it's a story, a lot of it takes place in the Hong Kong hotel room. It's kind of a cinema verite look at Edward Snowden and his revelations about this massive Orwellian super state surveillance.
Big Brother is watching you, yes. And that's quite a comparison in the best documentary arena. Well, we should certainly be looking at that when the Academy Awards roll around. And again, many people will already know because this will be, you know, podcast to lots of people. But that's what a comparison to know that they're both in the same category.
Right.
Glorifying America's war in Vietnam, which was completely unnecessary. And the other one looking at the truth and you know, here's really what many people, including myself, would consider an American hero who put his own life on the line and has paid for it dearly, Edward Snowden, to tell the truth, to simply tell the truth.
Well, right. And in the case of Selma, the same thing.
Yes.
In a similar way with Dr. King. Now, I have to say, this is why we do the Progies, because the Selma won the biggest award of the Progies, the best progressive picture of the year, and we call that award the Trumbo.
Yes.
And that's named after Dalton Trumbo.
Talk about heroes.
American screenwriter who was blacklisted and became one of the Hollywood Ten, and according to congressional testimony, it was because he had Ginger Rogers' character in Tender Comrades say, "Share and share alike, that's democracy." That's the kind of subversive messages that landed Dalton Trumbo.
Goodness.
He went to jail. He was sentenced for a year, and he was fined. Contempt of Congress, which he later said was true. He did hold Congress in contempt.
Well, a lot of people do these days.
Absolutely. What's their approval rating? I think rats have higher approval.
I believe they do. I think it's
done
with cockroaches, yeah.
And so Trumbo helped break the Hollywood blacklist. In 1960, he wrote two blockbusters, Spartacus and Exodus. And by the way, there's a new biography that just came out. It's a huge, I think it's like a 700-page book about Dalton Trumbo by his son Chris and Larry Saplaire, and I highly recommend it. So Selma won the Trumbo Best Progressive Picture, and Citizen Four won the GIGA for Best Progressive Documentary, and the GIGA is the Progi named after GIGA Vertov, who was a extraordinary Soviet documentary filmmaker who made these wildly creative, imaginative movies like The Man with the Movie Camera, and also the Kino Pravda, which means film truth, agitprop documentaries. So Citizen Four is celebrated by the Progies.
Well, that's good. And among the Best Picture, the Trumbo Award, some interesting films, some of which I've heard of, some of which I hadn't. There's Goodbye to Language, Pride, Cesar Chavez, which I want to see, 2 Days, One Night, The Liberator, The Congress, Birdman, and, of course, Selma.
Okay, so we have a rule of 5 nominees only unless there's a tie. So there was some time.
Uh-huh.
That's why there's more than 5 nominees for Best Picture, of which Selma won. But I could quickly tell you about some of the others.
Yeah, please.
Goodbye to Language is by Jean-Luc Godard, the French-Swiss filmmaker.
Uh-huh.
And it's his, he's 84 years old now, still cranking out them movies.
Boy, really?
And this is his first slotted 3D. And it didn't win the Best Picture Progy, but it won the Guio. The Guio is named after Guido Pontecorvo, the Italian filmmaker who made Battle of Algiers.
Oh, great.
And
film.
It's the Progy for Best Foreign Film, and that's what Godard's Goodbye to Language won.
Uh-huh.
Now, I did see Goodbye to Language. Please don't ask me to tell the audience what it's about, because listeners, I like the movie very much, but I'm still scratching my head. I have no idea what that movie's about. And it kind of stars Godard's dog, Roxy.
Well,
it's beautiful to look at.
Godard is something else entirely.
yes, he is. But isn't it great that this son of the Nouvelle Vague, of the New Wave, is still making movies?
Amazing. Well, that's great. And so what about Pride? I don't even know about that one at all.
Pride is a film. It's a feature film. It's a fact-based film, but with actors. About how do you remember during the 1980s there was a very militant strike? In fact, if anybody saw Billy Elliot, in that movie, the strike is depicted of miners against the Margaret Thatcher regime.
Hmm.
So at the time of that strike by the miners.
Mm-hmm.
Members of the gay community in the United Kingdom came forward to support the strike. Mm-hmm. And that's what the film is about.
Nice.
De facto union between two sectors of the oppressed, gays and
the miners.
Proletariat.
Fantastic.
And so that's what Pride's about. It's a British film.
I must see that. And, of course, Cesar Chavez is obviously about Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, and, you know, Michael Peña, who audiences may remember from American Hustle.
Oh, yeah. Great film.
He played the FBI agent, the Latino FBI agent who posed as an Arab sheik.
Uh-huh.
And he was also in Oliver Stone's World Trade Center. Michael Peña plays Cesar Chavez. But I have to tell you who I think, he's very good as Cesar Chavez, and it's overall a very good film, directed by the Mexican actor-director Diego Luna. But I have to tell you who kind of steals the show. Do you remember the TV series Ugly Betty?
Yes.
So that's America Ferrara, who also does one of the voices, the voice of Astrid in How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2.
Uh-huh.
She plays Caesar's wife, Helen.
Huh.
And she was nominated for the Progy for Best Actress. And she is just splendid as Caesar's wife. And she has this wonderful scene where in the California fields,
mm-hmm.
it's been banned to say the word strike. And I don't want to ruin the scene for the listeners. But she kind of, but America Ferrara is just wonderful. And I get just choked up thinking of that scene. It's so
I must see that. And there may be those who may not know of Cesar Chavez. He was the amazing organizer of the mostly the grape workers strike that lasted a long time.
And, United Farm Workers.
Yes, it was very successful. He you talk about David versus Goliath. Whoa, but what an amazing person he was. 2 days, one night. What's that? Never heard of it.
Oh, that is a great film, and the star of that film beat out America Ferrara for the Progy for the Best Actress, which is named after Karen Morley, an actress from the 1930s in movies like Scarface and Our Daily Bread.
Hmm.
And Marion Cotillard is a French actress who won the Academy Award, and she's up for the Oscar again, and she deserves to win. And she won the Oscar for playing Edith Piaf a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the French chanteuse, the French singer. So anyway, in this film, 2 Days and One Night, which I did see, you know how, you know, at the beginning of the show, Bert, we were talking about, you know, the conflict in 50 Shades of Grey, which, by the way, is getting lots of protests as well.
Yeah.
The conflict, you know, centering a film about people's private sex lives and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's legitimate. But in the film 2 Days, One Night, it actually has a much more dramatic story about an ordinary Belgian proletarian, a factory worker who's faced with the prospect of losing her job and the ramifications this would have on her family, because she's married and has kids. And Marion Cotillard is just wonderful as this Belgian woman, oh. French actress. And she has her own inner demons, she has her own troubles, and we kind of see something very subtle in this film directed by the Dardenne brothers, which is how the treatment you get from your coworkers will affect you psychologically, and the need that human beings have for unity and solidarity. And when she gets that in the film, she's up. And when she doesn't get that, how she becomes depressed and so on. So it's a wonderful performance.
We're talking on Keeping Democracy Alive. I'm Bert Cohen. Our guest today is Ed Rampell, L.A.-based film historian and critic, about the Progressive Movie Awards. And, you know, one of the things why people like movies, we like drama, we like art and literature, is because it reflects the human condition. And,
exactly.
You know, and what you're talking about here, you know, so much of this and what the Progressive Movie Awards is, you know, the human wanting to overcome evil, to have, you know, very difficult odds, fighting for justice. These movies sound really interesting, I got to say. I got to see these. So far in the best picture, we have Goodbye to Language, Pride, Cesar Chavez, 2 Days, 1 Night, and then this one called The Liberator. Tell us about that, Ed Rampell.
Yeah, you know, The Liberator is a wonderful film from Venezuela, and as our aware listeners will remember, Venezuela has been a very interesting country during this century with a left-leaning pro-socialist government. Chavez,
right.
and now Maduro. And they financed some interesting films. And The Liberator is about Simon Bolivar, who is to South America.
George Washington.
Like, yeah, what George Washington is to America, with one major exception. I don't think that Simon Bolivar owned slaves. but you know, I say that with qualifications because he did come from a ruling class family, which the film also shows. Having said that, it's a great film. Edgar Ramirez, who listeners may have seen him in this just wild, wild movie where he plays Carlos the Jackal, the kind of extremist left-wing terrorist that came out a few years ago. It was like, I'm not exaggerating, a 3 or 4 hour movie that wasn't boring for a minute.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was just a great movie. And so Bolivar is also a very good film.
The Liberator.
It's a biopic, The Liberator, about Simon Bolivar.
Oh, I have to see that. I've of course heard much about him through the years. I mean, you cannot go anywhere in Central or South America without being aware of Simon Bolivar.
Right, and let me just say something. I have no commercial ties to Netflix, so for our listeners who may say, well, you know, I don't have an opportunity to see these films, But Netflix carries a lot of them.
I'll bet.
I have no commercial tie to Netflix at all. But I'm just saying, you know, there are ways to see these films. And let me give a shout-out to the New Hampshire Theater, where I saw my very, very first movie in the late 1950s at Bethlehem. It's called The Colonial. They just had their centennial, I believe. And that's where I saw my first movie. And I'm very pleased to see that 100 years going strong as a specialty theater. So maybe they'll show some of these off-the-beaten-path movies.
Well, that's far away. Bethlehem, New Hampshire. Whew, man, you can't get much farther away from where this show is being recorded in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. What about these other films, the Trumbo Award, the Best Picture, The Congress, What's that one?
I hate to admit this, but I haven't seen that one. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, then we got
two
big films, Birdman and Selma. I haven't seen Birdman. I haven't seen Selma. I know about Selma. I don't really know about Birdman. It could win Best Picture at the Academy Awards, I understand.
I am rooting for Michael Keaton to get the Best Actor Oscar. Michael Keaton is just wonderful in this movie. Birdman is a beautiful, beautiful movie. It's a wonderful film. It's highly imaginative. And what I think it's about is about a struggle to be an artist and for an artist to be true to himself or herself, even if he or she has experienced great commercial success, which Michael Keaton's character has, not as playing Batman, which we know that Michael Keaton did in real life, but he played another superhero character named Birdman, and he did a franchise, a series of those films, and he made millions of dollars, but they had no artistic integrity, and so he returns to the stage, the legitimate stage, so to speak, and he tries to recapture his credibility, his self-respect, his family's respect, his integrity, puts it all on the line to try and become a true artist. And that may sound like very dramatic and stuff, and it is, but it's also a very funny movie. Ed Norton, who's up for Best Supporting Actor, is hilarious, making fun of method actors. He's just so funny. And I really, really loved Birdman. I can't wait to see it again. It has some great music in it. Really, if there's one, commercial movie to see this year, I would say if you have a choice between American Sniper or Birdman.
Gee, let me think what you're going to say.
Michael Keaton does not kill 160 people.
Well, and of course, Selma is the one that won. I haven't seen that as of yet, but of course, having lived through the period, I know the story somewhat. It's good art as well as good politics.
Well, there's one really great scene in Selma, and that is the Pettus Bridge.
Yes.
Where the Southern segregationist apartheid police beat up the demonstrators like future Congressman John Lewis.
Right.
That scene reminded me of the famous Odessa steps scene
in
Sergei Eisenstein's Battleship Potemkin.
Whoa, that was a great film.
The famous slaughter by the Cossacks and the Tsarist troops of the unarmed citizens on the Odessa steps, who were, by the way, those were my ancestors. And that scene on the bridge in Selma is really great. Now, let me tell you something that I really liked about Selma. And David Oyelowo, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing this.
I can't help you. I don't know.
David Oyelowo, who's a British actor of African, obviously he's of African ancestry. So he plays Dr. King. And he won the Progie for Best Actor, which is called the Garfield, named after the great lefty actor John Garfield. So anyway, in Selma, we're all used to this kind of whitewash, no pun intended, image of Dr. King as just purely a visionary for peace, which is true. He was. But what I loved about Selma is two things. One is, it shows Dr. King as being a very good organizer and a great strategist. And the other thing, and you might have heard that this has raised hackles. It's hard to believe, but there's still people out there who are LBJ, President Johnson defenders. In the film, Dr. King is shown as being very, very confrontation with President Johnson and pushing President Johnson to support the Voting Rights Act. And those are some really great things that you see.
Yeah, I think there was some artistic freedom there, and artistic freedom is a great thing. I criticize President Johnson a lot on the war in Vietnam, but on this, I understand it is not accurate that he did not have to be dragged by Dr. King to be there, President Johnson actually deserves more credit than the film gave him due. But again, artistic license is a wonderful thing. It really is.
But you know, for people who would agree with you, there's a wonderful scene where LBJ confronts not Dr. King, but Governor George Wallace.
Oh, I bet that's good.
and really, LBJ gives it to Wallace, and he says, basically, I'm paraphrasing, what do you want to be remembered for? And that scene supports what you're saying. So who knows what the truth is behind closed doors?
Right.
You weren't there. I wasn't there.
Right.
But that depiction of Dr. King as a fighter, not a violent fighter,
right,
using nonviolent tactics, but as a feisty fighter.
An agitator.
Also, by the way, although she didn't get nominated, Carmen Ejogo, who previously played in two productions, Sally Hemings, Thomas Jefferson's black
mistress.
Well, you know,
whatever.
Common law wife. Actually.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And who bore Thomas Jefferson children, etc. Now she plays Coretta Scott King, so it's very clever casting.
Oh, good. Well,
and
I want to.
She's wonderful as Coretta Scott King. And she really deserved a nomination for Best Supporting Actress, which unfortunately the Oscars didn't give her.
Well, the Oscars are about a little bit of commercialism, I think. You know, I mean, it's some of the films that they have awarded over the years, I think, what? Oh, how could they do this?
Not only that, Bert, I agree with you, but when you look at the competition against them, films that are completely forgotten now, and, don't get me started on that.
Well, I had the chance, we have, where this show is coming from in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, something called Telluride by the Sea. And it's always, they show movies in September that nobody's seen yet. They're way ahead of their time. And I picked one, and I'm so glad I picked The Imitation Game.
Okay.
Benedict Cumberbatch is up for the Garfield, the Best Actor. And also David Oyelowo, who I guess actually won your
That's
award.
That's right, yeah.
But, wow, he did a great job in that, I have to say. And what an amazing story, The Imitation Game. You talk about good guys, and I won't reveal the ending there, but the true story is amazing. You talk about heroes. His name, I can't even remember his name.
Alan Turing.
Yes, Alan Turing, who probably saved, 20 million lives or so, and just kind of disappeared from memory because he was gay. And that was a very, very tough time. So the best actress in for the Progies is that's the Karen Morley Award.
That's right.
And who won that one?
Well, that was Marion Cotillard for Two Days and One Night. And I have to tell you what the Imitation Game won.
Yes, please. Oh, what did it win? The Renoir?
Yeah, it won the Renoir Award, the Progie for the Best Anti-War Film, because, as we know, that Alan Turing's cracking the Nazi secret codes helped to turn the tide and help the Allies win World War II.
Yes.
So the voters for the Progies considered it to be an anti-war film in that sense. And in that category, the Renoir is named after Jean Renoir, who directed an anti-militaristic masterpiece called Grand Illusion.
Great film. That was a great film. And how do you think The Imitation Game is going to do at that other award festival?
Well, I hope Keira Knightley wins
the
Best Supporting Actress.
Yes.
She She's a wonderful actress. If anybody ever has a chance to see a film called A Dangerous Method about Sigmund Freud.
Oh, yes. That was her. I forgot that was her.
Yeah, well, that's the sign of a really good actress, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. That you don't remember, you just see the character that they're playing. You don't see the person who is doing the acting. Oh, very good point. Yeah, that was a very good film, A Dangerous Method.
Can I tell our listeners?
Sure.
Won our Lifetime Achievement Award, the Sergei, named after Sergei Eisenstein, the director of Potemkin.
Yes, please do.
Harry Belafonte.
Really?
Yeah. This year, of the dozen or so progies, four of them went to black-themed or black talents. So Harry, a long-time civil rights activist, did win the Lifetime Progressive Achievement Award for his on- and off-screen work. And another black-themed film won the award named after Paul Robeson. Who was a friend of Harry's, by the way. And that film that won the Robeson is called Dear White People.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
That is a hilarious campus satire about racism that was completely overlooked in every category by the Academy. But Dear White People, if you get a chance to see it on Netflix or cable TV or in a theater or whatever, it's a hilarious movie starring Tessa Thompson, who also portrays the SNCC organizer Diane Nash in Selma.
There's the Ziga Award. I know you mentioned Citizen Four won that, but what? That's for Best Progressive Documentary. I love documentaries, and what a list there is there. I'll just briefly read, aside from Citizen Four, which I must see, Gore, The United States of Amnesia. I'm sure that's about Gore Vidal. The Unknown Known. What's that one?
Well, that is by Errol Morris, who's a very well-known documentary filmmaker, where you may remember he won the Academy Award for a documentary about McNamara.
Oh, right. Wasn't that The Fog of War?
Fog of War. Thank you.
Powerful film. Yes.
And he directed a film with Secretary of Offense interviewing Donald Rumsfeld.
Oh, my.
That was an interesting look at a guy who's just like, completely lacking any self-awareness.
And that's
at the same time a gigantic egotist, but in the same moment completely unaware of himself.
And that's called The Unknown Known?
Yeah.
Oh, I must see that one. What about The Internet's Own Boy, the story of Aaron Schwartz? I haven't heard of that one.
That is a really great documentary. You know, one of the really despicable things about the government now is who they decide to let off the hook. For example, none of the Bush regime people were prosecuted for war crimes. None of the big Wall Street people went to the slammer for wrecking the world economy.
That's amazing.
Yet they throw the book at dissidents like Edward Snowden, as we see in Citizen Four, or they throw the book at Aaron Swartz.
Who's that?
Who was... a well-known kind of a social media whiz kid, computer whiz kid, and activist. And he wanted to keep the Internet open as a resource.
Right.
And allegedly he hacked into a university's scholarly papers that were online, allegedly to make them known to the public. And the government went after him with a vengeance.
Hmm.
And I believe that the university in question, I think it's in the, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble remembering, so I don't want to say which school I think it is and then I'm wrong, but it was, I'm almost certain, in New England. Please excuse me.
Probably. All the good universities are here. we got to come to an end here, but I'm sure listeners are going to want to take a look at the list of the various movies that were up for the various awards. Is there some website to which you can send them to?
It's going to be published this week. The winners will be published at progressive.org. But if you go to progressive.org now, and like if you like click on my name, you'll see my previous stories. And one of them has all the nominees that have been up for the Progies, that some we discussed that didn't win.
Right.
You'll be able to see that. And also, you could see my article about the protests against 50 Shades of Grey,
yes,
and the separate article about the protest against American Sniper.
So the website would be The Progressive, and then look for...
Not The Progressive, just progressive.org, Bert.
Progressive.org. Thank you for clarifying that. And then look for Ed Rampell. Wow, fascinating stuff. I got some movies to watch. Thank you so much. Always good to talk to you from the Left Coast. Ed Rampell, thanks so much.
Thanks, Bert. See you at the movies.
You betcha. It is fun. And it's about dreams. You know, what are our dreams? Thanks very much for listening. Email me, bert@bertcohen.com. Thanks for listening to Keeping Democracy Alive.
What they might find out.